Now, back to Sports 56 Mornings.
Good morning!
On Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. Here once again, Greg Gaston and Eli Savoy.
Welcome back, everyone. 9:04 the time. Final hour for us today here on this Monday edition of Sports 56 Mornings. Greg Gaston, Eli Savoy, and Zach Boyd with you from the Family Leisure Studios. Family Leisure, it's where family and fun come together. 2120 Witten Road, just north of I-40. Go see the great folks, Billy and the gang, and say you heard it here on Sports 56 Mornings. I did mention the Mike Evans news, according to reports, two-year deal, $52 million. $52 million. Now, are they going to be able to re-sign Baker Mayfield, or are they going to have to go out and get another quarterback?
I would assume they're. I think they want to bring back Baker. I would assume they'll be able to, but I do not know.
Well, that's going to cost them a pretty penny. And there's $26 million per with Mike Evans, but certainly you want Mike Evans to be on your team, not on an opposing team, beating up on you. Speaking of football in the NFL, sad news over the weekend. Chris Mortensen passed away at the age of 72. The longtime ESPN football analyst who had been battling cancer for seems like several years, a guy who did a great job in breaking stories and giving good information and seemed to be well-loved by everybody across the board in the world of football because the condolences and things of that nature for his family just rolling right in, talking about how they loved Chris, how they worked with Chris and loved working with him, and how they also appreciated his hard work and dedication.
Yeah, he... It was, as I said, everybody from the world of the NFL had something, you know, a lot of people with an experience here or there where he reached out to them. I mean, it just seemed like a super nice guy, supportive of everybody else kind of in the industry, helping young people out in the industry. He was, you know, I never had any interactions with him or anything like that, but man, to read a lot of the stories and things from people, seems like he was universally loved and just a really good guy.
Yeah, I never had a chance to meet him either, but he wasn't one of those shock jocks, if you will. I like to use that terminology, even though it doesn't work for a reporter in this case, but he's not throwing out stuff hoping that it will stick. He's not throwing crap out there. He's not trying to get a response from somebody. He's just trying to give you information from his sources that is accurate. I guarantee you he was an old school guy that doubled and triple checked his sources before he released that information. Also, a couple of passings from the baseball world over the weekend. These guys were not superstars, but I certainly remember watching them. UL Washington for the Kansas City Royals when they had those great Royals teams, and Ed Ott, who played for the Pirates, if not his entire career, most of his career. They both passed away over the weekend. So sad news from the world of sports, just period, with the loss of Mortensen, UL Washington, and Ed Ott. According to reports, Memphis is going to hire Lee Marks as their running backs coach to replace Sean Dawkins. Marks, the last 2 years, was with the University of Washington.
They had some success this past year.
Pretty good. Pretty, pretty, pretty good. Before that, Fresno State, where he was even an interim head coach for a game, was at Boise State as well. So again, nothing official from the school, but I would imagine that these reports are right on. Lee Marks to be a part of the Memphis staff, Ryan Silverfield's staff, as they get closer and closer to starting spring football. We've got spring football happening all over the country here. Sometime this month getting underway for every school. There were a couple schools that actually started in February, but most starting in March. Back to, also with football, the Combine. And Xavier Worthy. Who? The Texas wide receiver, I tell you. What did he do? How about run the 40-yard dash in 4.21 seconds at the Combine?
That's moving. I didn't understand why in a lot of these things Worthy is not, most people did not have him in the first round. Because that dude is really, really good. And then now this, I think, will probably boost him up, and a lot of people will have him in the first round. And A good chance he could go in the first round with that type of showing. 4-2-1 in a 40 is. That shouldn't be possible. In my mind, that should not be possible. I can't fathom running that fast.
Sets the new combine record, which previously was 4.22. What did Calvin run? Do you remember, Zach, what Calvin's 40 was at the combine?
Ridley or Johnson?
No, Calvin Austin.
Oh, that I don't know.
See if you can find that out. But obviously, it wasn't 4.21. And Calvin Austin, blazing speed, track star. We know how fast he is with the Steelers. But yeah, 4.21. I mean, you got to see it to believe it. And then even while you're watching, you're going, I can't believe
it. Well, it's an effortless thing, too. Like, it's just such a smooth run. And you're like, okay, that's a 4.21. Okay, all right. That's crazy.
Calvin Austin ran a 4.32.
That's blazing as well, but 4.32, not 4.21. Also from the world of sports over the weekend, Caitlin Clark for Iowa versus Ohio State. She went in needing 18 points to pass the pistol, Pete Maravich. She did so, as expected, 35 points, 6 rebounds, 9 assists. She becomes the all-time leading scorer in NCAA history.
She's incredible. I know for whatever reason some people like seem to want to always try to tear her down. Like it's amazing to watch her. And all of the attention teams pay to her and she still can go get 30. You know, then that's the thing, like to set the scoring record, but also set the Big Ten assist record, leads the nation in assists while doing all this stuff. Like, it's a ridiculous career that she has put together. She's amazing. What she's done for women's basketball is incredible. Like the must see, you know, from selling out arenas or just people watching on TV that she has become. Seems to be a pretty humble about things and gives credit to the people of the past, all of this stuff. You know, Lynette Woodard was there yesterday.
Maya Moore.
For the game.
Mm-hmm. That was cool with Maya Moore, that interaction. Did you see that?
I don't know. I watched that game yesterday. I don't watch women's basketball. I'll be honest. I don't like women's basketball that much. It's generally pretty bad. I watched that game yesterday. I love watching Caitlin Clark play basketball.
She's great at what she does. I don't watch a ton of it. You know, I've called games for Memphis. If LSU's playing and they're playing South Carolina in the tournament, you know, Final Four matchup, I'm going to watch. I'm interested in the Lady Vols. I've always been interested in since Pat Summitt was there. But, you know, it doesn't float my boat all the time. But the haters for Clark, I don't get it because all she's going to do is add more exposure to the WNBA and maybe even help with salaries. There are going to be more eyes when she plays games. Now, maybe it'll have an effect overall with the product, or maybe it'll just be her and the team she goes to, which will be undoubtedly the Indiana Fever, who have the first pick. But most have embraced her, most from the past. You know, like Lynette Water. I mean, they have great things to say. Maya Moore and her interaction with her was fantastic as she worshipped Maya Moore as a little kid, you know, ran over and got her to sign something when she would go to the games and watch the Lynx play. But there are some that have come out and said, I don't know, whether it's jealousy or whatever the case may be. But, yeah, Clark is a huge name. There's other huge names. There's been other names that have certainly helped propel and move up the WNBA. It still has a ways to go, but Caitlin Clark will help them get closer to their goal. And that is that not only recognition, but more pay for the players.
I don't know a whole lot about it because, again, I don't follow, but I can't imagine anybody's had more impact on women's basketball than Caitlin Clark.
In the history of the game?
Yes.
I don't know.
I mean, they sell out arenas everywhere they go. Like, that's not happening in women's basketball.
No.
Like, everywhere she goes, it's a sellout. TV, like, people watch it on TV. Like, she has, like, become must-see. And, I don't No, I'm pretty sure there's never been a women's basketball player like that.
No, but and you're probably right. But here's why. One, she's great. But two, let's go back. We don't even have to go back that far to great players that did not have social media talking about them the way social media can do that now to make sure that everybody and their mom knows what's going on, and then you get caught up in the fever. That's what happens with social media. When Cheryl Miller was playing, Cheryl Miller was unbelievable. And Reggie Miller's sister and all that stuff. And she got great exposure, and there were people to watch her, but it wasn't the crowds that Caitlin Clark's getting, not the sellouts. But she didn't have that social media backing. I would imagine if it was a social media buzz and became a lead story, for goodness sakes, on ESPN, then Cheryl Miller would get that buzz, or some of the other players before her. Right now, it just happens to be Caitlin Clark. I don't know if she's the greatest player. She certainly has the numbers to be in the argument, to be in the discussion. She's the all-time leading scorer now, men or women. But I don't know if she's going to go into the WNBA and score 30 a game, or she's going to go into the WNBA and, you know, score 17 a game and take it on the chin a lot. I would imagine that there's going to be some players ready to go and want to defend her, big physical players. Let's see what they can do. But as far as a college player, your statement is probably accurate.
The thing that though that out of yesterday's game that blew me away, because I don't like, I know obviously Pistol Pete was a unbelievable scorer and it's incredible what the things he did and without the 3-point line, all of that stuff. But I had no idea until they said it yesterday during that broadcast, because they were talking about he only had 3 years versus her 4 years to do this. But when they said Pete Maravich averaged 38 shot attempts per game for his career, I almost fell over. 38 shot attempts per game? Did anybody else on the team ever shoot the basketball?
Well, he was a great distributor of the basketball, too. I want to know what his assist numbers were. Zach, can you look up Pistol Pete's? You're talking about when he was at LSU.
Yes. Dude averaged 38 shots per game.
I know.
In a non-shot clock era, I would assume some teams like stalled a little bit, like because they didn't want him to.
Four corners.
Like he in his 3 years has 500 more field goal attempts than she has in her four.
Wow.
Like that's the thing people like, well, he only did three. He's still taking way more shots than she has to this point. Again, the 3-point line is a big difference, but he had over 3,100 shot attempts in his career in 3 years.
Now look, Pistol Pete was, he wasn't the best player to ever play the game, not even close. But you talk about must watch. If he was on TV, which is rarity back then, you had to watch. If you were into college basketball, you had to watch the Pistol. The Pistol Pete was a great scorer, a great shooter, and then he was Jason Williams, white chocolate Jason Williams, on steroids as far as being able to pass the ball from every angle possible. Try to get his assist numbers. I'm curious because I think he had good assist numbers too, but I may be mistaken. When you shoot the ball 38
LSU,
times.
He had 5.1 assists per game, and totaled it's 425 assists.
So 5.1 assists per game. That's not too bad.
No, not bad at all.
I bet you he accounted for, 80% of what they did offensively, either through assists or scoring?
Well,
I'm guessing, right?
I don't know how many shots they averaged as a team per game, but if you're taking 38 shots and then you're assisting on 5 buckets per game, like there's not much left.
What did he shoot percentage-wise? Well, that's another thing to look at. Okay, he took more shots than Caitlin. What was his percentage shooting the basketball? Obviously, it was all two-pointers or free throws. Wasn't 3-point shots.
I don't know what his percentage was.
Because
if he's
shooting 27% from the field, then he was just like a gunner, but he's not.
Actually, when they said it, I was like, there's no way that could be true. I'm like, there's no way one person was shooting 38 shots per game. And then I looked it up and I was like, my golly, he took 38 shots per game. Like that just.
Yeah, you just you staggered me when you said that.
I don't
bit.
Know. Like I
fell
just,
back a little
I,
bit.
I just can't even. I can't fathom that, especially because I was thinking like non-shot clock era, like I would have thought teams would have been trying to like stall and really slow it up because you don't want Pistol Pete to have the basketball. And I was like, but he still was averaging a shot per minute almost. Yeah,
he got to the hole. He would bank shots.
I mean, that doesn't even like hers. I think is like nine. I think it's basically per game. I think she's at like 19 shots per game. He's at twice that. He took twice as many shots per game. And you watch her and you feel like she shoots a lot. And she does. But I mean, she should. It would be dumb not to. But I was like, when they said that, I just was like, that is an incorrect statement. I am not believing that until I looked at it. I'm like, they actually weren't lying to me.
Well, it was a record-setting weekend with what Caitlin Clark did to become the all-time leading scorer in NCAA Division I basketball history, men or women, with what the incredible performance by Xavier Worthy at the combine with a 4.21 40-yard dash, but not to be outdone, LeBron James, as he goes over 40,000 points for his career, the only player in history. More than any player to ever play the game, LeBron James. Tip of the cap to the captain.
He's a great player.
He's a great player who's still great. And I'm old school. I'm sorry. It's hard for me to come off of Michael Jordan as the greatest player ever in history. It's still ingrained in my cranium. But LeBron James, he's 39, and he's one of the top 15 players in the NBA.
He doesn't slow down. It's incredible. I think they took the same number of games to get from 30,000 to 40,000 as it did for his first 10,000 points, I think, in the league. He literally is not slowing down. It's pretty incredible. When you're 6'9 and 260 or whatever, it's like the physical condition he has kept himself in, it's ridiculous.
Now, the argument, the counter would be, look who Jordan was trying to score over or score around or go around, you know, guys that could be more physical than you can in the NBA. And in a lot of instances in the NBA now, when LeBron is at full speed, it's a locomotive and you get out of his way pretty much. He's going to tomahawk one down. You don't want to be posterized. You're not playing physical with LeBron James. Whereas with Michael Jordan, you try to play physical. He was just better than you. He'd jump over you. He'd go around you. He'd scoop one around you or in between you. But he was playing against some of those physical players, whether it be the Pistons, whether it be whoever, the Utah Jazz, a little bit different situation. So we could always argue or at least debate those discussions about guys from different eras. So Michael, it just probably will never be topped. Again, I have it ingrained. It's Michael Jordan. But for many, many, including a young buck like Zach, right, you go with LeBron James, and many will. And it's hard to argue that. You could debate it, but there's no right or wrong answer.
Pete Maravich, by the way, shot 43.8% for his career from the field.
It's good. It's not great, but it's pretty good.
Clark shoots 46.5%. But yeah, she averages 19.9. For her career, 19.9 field goal attempts per game. He averaged 38.1. I can't even say that. I wonder who's leading college basketball in field goal attempts this year. And how many
David Jones.
How many they average per game. I got to look this. That is just an astonishing number to me.
All right, why don't you get that? We'll have that after the break. We'll continue to take your calls and texts on the Sissy's Log Cabin listener line. We'll get back into the Tigers after that crazy game yesterday. Coming back from 22 down, the win over UAB. We'll get back to that and continue to take your calls and texts. You're tuned in to Sports 56 Mornings with Greg and Eli on Real Sports Talk, Sports 56 and 98.5 FM.
Broadcasting from the Family Leisure Studio, we are Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. Now, back to Sports 56 Mornings.
Morning.
On Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. Here once again, Greg Gaston and Eli Savoy.
Welcome back, everyone. 9:26 the time. Did you find what you were looking for?
Tyler Thomas of Hofstra leads the nation in field goal attempts. And he averages just over 19 a game. So he's basically he's just a little bit fewer than Caitlin Clark on the women's side, but so he averages half of what Pistol Pete averaged, and is leading and he is number one in the country.
Got a text from our buddy John Barlos, who joins us every Friday. This is interesting. He said regarding Maravich and the three pointer. Dale Brown is coach at LSU. Didn't we have Dale on the show one time? I think we did. Supposedly went through the shot charts for his career and estimated that Pete made 12 threes per game and would have therefore averaged 57 points per game. As John says, now it's Dale Brown, so take that with a grain of salt. But let's say he made 6 threes per game. That's 50 points and not far-fetched at all.
No, I mean, there's no doubt. Like, who knows what kind of numbers he would have put up with a three-point line. Because, again, he was shooting those shots not without any reward. Like, there wasn't the bonus of having. So I'm sure there were a lot of if he had the three-point line, he would have shot a lot more shots behind that three-point line. Who knows the numbers? But, again, I'm not trying to take anything away from Pistol Pete. I was just blown away by that number. I had no idea that he had that 38 shots per game was even possible, quite frankly, in the college game at any point in history. That is just so many shots per game.
Also from the weekend, Johnny Manziel, remember him?
I do.
He came out of the woodwork on social media and announced that he will not be at the Heisman ceremony until Reggie Bush has been given back his Heisman Trophy Award. Manziel's not the only one that has spoken up about Reggie Bush, Rick Pitino, among others. They want his trophy returned by the NCAA. Bush is, of course, suing the NCAA for defamation. And I'm reading a story, I'm about halfway through the story, that Michael McCann has written. Michael McCann is a sports law guy, sports lawyer, not guy. And at sportico.com, you can read about it. He says that Bush could win with a settlement that leads to the trophy's return. It goes through what he's suing, why he's suing, which goes back to the suit which was made in an Indiana court in August. Alleges an NCAA spokesperson defamed him in 2021. I'm not going to go through all the reasons why he feels that he has a legit defamation lawsuit. But Mike McCann is basically making he's saying it's basically a win-win if instead of going to court and dragging this thing out, instead of a financial settlement, the NCAA doesn't admit to anything. There's no financial settlement. Just reinstate him as a Heisman winner, give him back his trophy. It's a win-win, according to McCann, because Reggie Bush gets that trophy back, his acknowledgement, he's back at the ceremony, he's back in the good graces of the Heisman, and that committee the committee that awards that. And then he's also making it look good for Charlie Baker, the NCAA president, where he does something positive, because all it is negative with the NCAA, and he does something positive in the eyes of the fans, of people, that he's giving back this trophy as we live in a world now where players are paid for their services, not paid to play technically, and that's what he's arguing, that he was not paid to play. It was a whole deal with an agent and all that. Again, you can read about it. I won't bore you with the details, but now it's being paid because of who you are and being able to earn that money with the NIL. So why not? Why shouldn't he get his trophy back? Really good, interesting reading. But Johnny Manziel, Johnny's made a statement, Eli.
I'm sure the idea of Johnny not being at the ceremony will have them quaking in their boots, and they'll make this correct immediately.
Yeah, I'm sure they're real concerned.
I'm like, they're like, oh my gosh, we can't have the ceremony without Johnny here, so we have to now change this. I don't understand. Like, to me, it makes no sense why they ever took it from him in the first place. Like, just give him the damn trophy. Who cares? Like, everybody knows he won the Heisman Trophy. It's like anything else, the whole vacating of stuff. Everybody knows Reggie Bush was a Heisman Trophy winner. So give him the trophy. Why? I don't know why we have to try and take it away from him and act like it didn't happen.
Hey, Wendy's doesn't have a problem with Reggie Bush. Adam Rittenberg reporting that EA Sports has already reached 87% of its goal for player opt-ins. We had this story a couple weeks ago. We told you that the players would be compensated for their name, image, likeness to play, to participate in the EA Sports college football game. And again, 87% has opted in. Team rosters in the game will be 85, according to Adam Rittenberg. Just cool. That's another cool thing for these kids now to be able to experience this. You, not somebody with your name, excuse me, with your number that you know it's you, but not really. This will be you. Right? This will be your name on the back of the jersey in the game.
I think the old game used the names.
But it went away. The game went away.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it did before it all came crashing down, the lawsuit and all that. I'm saying now it's the return of that, and you'll be able to enjoy this because they haven't been able to do it for years. How long has it been gone? It's been gone quite some time.
Yeah, I don't remember when the last one was. I don't know. I played it in college.
I never played it.
The last time I played it, but I don't know when it eventually went away altogether. So I am not sure as far as that is concerned.
All right. We head back to the lead story of the day, and that's, of course, our talk in hour number one and in hour number two about the Tigers and their come-from-behind win, one for the ages over UAB, 106-87 after trailing at one point by 22, trailing at the half by 15. It's the largest comeback in the Penny Hardaway era. And we gave you the note as well that Memphis becomes only the second Division I team since 2010 to win by 15-plus points after trailing by 20-plus points. The Tigers now will take what they hopefully learned from that second half and throw away everything that happened in that first half and take it to Florida Atlantic on Saturday for their showdown. They're second in a couple of weeks against the Owls. But the strange season continued on Sunday at FedEx Forum.
Got a text on the Sissy's Log Cabin Sports 86 listener line asking if the Tigers have ever had three players score 25 or more in the same game before yesterday. And
in their history?
And I have no idea.
I would imagine they had to have. In their long history?
Three players scoring 20. I mean, that's guaranteed 75 points amongst three guys. That's not easy to do in the college game.
It's not easy to do, but I think, and maybe somebody out there knows the answer to it and can text us at 360-8255. I don't know, and I'm not going to sit here and try to do all this research. It would take me a lot longer than the 26 minutes we have left on the show. It's a good question, and I'm sure it doesn't happen too often, but I would guess that it has happened in Memphis history.
Yeah, I have no idea. It very well could have. I have no idea. I'm sure people at the university may have already looked into it and know when the last time it happened, if it had ever happened. I don't know. I have not seen any notes from anybody about whether it had happened before, and if so, when it happened. You're talking 25 for three different guys is certainly not something that happens very often. I know that much.
So I was talking about this a little bit in hour number one. There were, according to reports, five NBA scouts at this game. There have been scouts at other games as well. And I got to think that David Jones, and I haven't looked at a mock in a while, but every time I looked at a mock, his name was absent. Now, do I think David Jones is some lottery pick? I don't. I think there's a lot of improvement to be made on defense. He's got to get better handles. But he can score. He can figure out a way to score. He can offensive rebound for a guy that's not the tallest guy in the world. He can shoot the rock. He is going to be drafted. There is no question in my mind that he's going to be drafted. Where and when, though, is the question. Now, again, he could come back for a final year. I don't expect it to happen. He hasn't made any announcement. That would be a major coup. If Penny Hardaway could get David Jones back for one more year. We know that Nicholas Jourdain told Dave Woloshin after their game against Florida Atlantic that he is coming back. Nicholas Jourdain's a good, solid player. He's not David Jones. You get David Jones, and all of a sudden now getting the other pieces is a little bit easier than it would be right now without him. But I just can't imagine David Jones not going pro. And again, I think he's an NBA player. If not an NBA player, he's a two-way guy at worst to start his career. Again, he's got to get better in certain areas, Eli, but his stock is climbing. And I think the scouts that were on hand certainly probably saw what I saw yesterday.
Well, I mean, the fact that he has shot the three as well as he has certainly, I think, bodes well. When he walked off the court, they took him out of the game at the end of the game yesterday, that did not look like a guy who's planning on coming back.
Right.
Which I can't imagine why he would possibly come back. Unless... You know, he thinks another year could somehow make him a first-round pick, something like that. But to me, it wouldn't make a whole lot of sense for him to come back. He's had an unbelievable year.
I know what they're saying.
Very good chance to be Conference Player of the Year, could be All-American. I don't know what one more year is going to do for him.
But you know people are thinking right now, as you say that, and you're absolutely right with everything you just said. They're saying, NIL. Well, again, NIL and how much Memphis can actually give him are two different things. How about if Kentucky or somebody like that swooped in and David Jones got word that, hey, man, they want to give you $1.2 million to come play here, you know, through the collectives. You know, does that change your mind? Memphis, they can pay him a certain amount, but they're not going to be able to pay him like some of these other programs can. So, is that something that he'd be interested in as opposed to going to playing? G League contracts are how much, the G League, if you're a two-way guy?
Two-way is $500,000. It's half the rookie minimum. This year was $518,000, something like that.
$518,000. If you're a regular G League player, it's a lot less. And then, of course, you move up. You get 10 days with the NBA, or you get the call up, whatever the case may be. But if a college, if a program is able to get you somewhere in those figures, well above what you would get as a two-way guy, he may stay another year. But I don't think so. I don't think that's the case. I know him, but I don't know him well enough that it's all about the money and that he wouldn't want to stay at Memphis if the money was good enough. But I would think that right now this guy is ready to go and take his talents up a level and try to make it in the NBA. I could be wrong.
Matt Texan says the favorite parts of yesterday was when they were breaking down going to halftime and the announcers were talking about how few points we had allowed in the last two games, but we had allowed 61 in the first half of this game. Then we come out and only give up 26 in the entire second half. It was awesome. Yeah, again, I don't like, because even the 61, if you go back to the second half of the other UAB game, so at that point, the last two halves of basketball they had played against UAB, they had given up 113 points in those two halves. So the idea of holding them to 26 in the second half certainly would not be anything that you would possibly think. Like, that team did whatever they wanted to do offensively in the first half of that game. If they wanted a dunk, they got a dunk. If they wanted an open three-pointer, they got an open three-pointer. Like, it was just like they basically like a practice for them. The idea of them only scoring 26 points in the second half is crazy.
Yeah, as I opened the show today with, that game was a microcosm of everything we've seen this season, in that they've had tremendous highs and low lows, and they've had roller coaster games. They've had games where they were out of it at halftime, like they were yesterday, like they were at Wichita State, and came back and won. There were games when they were in complete control over South Florida by 20 and lost. There were games where they played in the Paradise Jam championship game. Villanova crushed them in the first half. I think they scored 18 points. They couldn't find the ocean from the pier. And then in the second half, They played incredibly well, couldn't come back and win the game, but came back. It's the up and down that's, I'm sure, driving them crazy, but certainly driving fandom crazy that support and follow the Tigers that you just don't know. Right, as John Rothstein said, they could bow out in the first round of the American Conference Tournament and then go to the Sweet 16. Which Tigers team will show up and what does it take? What they have proven is that they have the team, they have the players to do it against anybody. But it's only when they step on the gas, man, put the gas, the pedal down, you know, to the metal. If they don't and they let up on it or come in half-ass, they're losing to anybody. That's weird. That's got to be tough on a coach when you have a team that you just don't know what you're going to get day in and day out.
One of the best things that's happened here in the past year in Memphis has been the arrival of Genesis Diamonds. Genesis Diamonds has brought a game changer to the entire jewelry in this area. Women wearing bigger, better quality diamonds, amazing designer rings, all thanks to the arrival of Genesis Diamonds. They blow everyone away with their amazing selection when it comes to diamonds from every size, whether it be natural, whether it be lab grown, all different shapes, all of that, plus the rock bottom prices. Then you throw in the designer rings that you can't find anywhere else, guarantees and warranties that are strongest in America. That's what you're all going to find at Genesis Diamonds. That's what makes them the best. You, if you haven't been there yet, well, you need to get by and check it out. If you're thinking about an engagement ring, you're thinking about any piece of jewelry that you're looking to buy, go, don't buy anywhere else until you go check out Genesis Diamonds. You've got a special occasion coming up. You're looking for that special gift. Go see them at Genesis Diamonds. Poplar and Perkins Extended. You'll be blown away like everybody else when you go see the folks at Genesis Diamonds.
When we come back, final segment, still have a chance to get in a call or text if you like on the Sissy's Log Cabin listener line. We had a Monday finish on the PGA Tour. We'll tell you who came out victorious down in Florida. And a long winning streak in the NCAA comes to an end. We'll tell you who finally lost. This is Sports 56 Mornings with Greg and Eli on Real Sports Talk, Sports 56 and 98.5 FM.
Be sure to follow us at Sports 56 WHBQ on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube to watch live video of our shows, stay up to date with station events, and have chances to win prizes. Don't miss out on anything that's going on. Follow us at Sports 56 WHBQ. Now back to Sports 56 Mornings.
Good morning.
On Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. Here once again, Greg Gaston and Eli Savoy.
Welcome back, everybody. Final segment here on this Monday edition of Sports 56 Mornings. Greg wants to talk a little Tigers. Welcome, Greg. How are you?
Good morning, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just want to say thank you to the Tigers for giving the Tiger fans something to be proud of. All the fans really wanted was effort, and that's all they've been wanting. And for you guys to step up, finally buy in, and step up and put the kind of effort that they put together in the last couple of weekends, it's really amazing to me, because I had gave up like a lot of people, and I'm really thankful. I'm really proud of the guys. They made a lot of people happy this weekend.
Greg, thank you very much. Appreciate it. I know you're not satisfied, right? They haven't finished, and you certainly want to see them finish strong, but he's right. It's been too inconsistent. There have been a lot, like I said, a lot of high highs and low lows this year, but it's all about effort, and it seems like when that team can put the effort forth, Eli, they have a chance to win against anybody.
Yeah, I don't know. I would like to have heard from Greg after about the first 18 minutes of that game and see what he was, what his feelings were on the effort and all of that.
Yeah, but he would have said it was no effort, lack of effort.
They figured out a way to correct it. And again, there's no doubt they have the ability. When you've got, you know, a three-headed monster that could all go score 25 in a game like they did yesterday, you got a guy like David Jones who can get you 30 on any given day. You have the ability to beat anybody, but we know they have the ability to lose. And the question becomes, again, if they have to, if they don't get into the top four seeds and have to play theoretically four games in 4 days is the only way to win the conference tournament and get in. My question isn't about fatigue and stuff like that. It's, can this team put together four straight performances? Because it only takes one of the bad ones and you're done. And I don't know that this team can put together four straight of the good performances.
Speaking of double byes, the American Conference Women's Tournament begins this Saturday. There's one regular season game to go for all the teams, and that, I believe, is tomorrow night. Memphis will play at North Texas. North Texas is tied for first place, so it's going to be tough. But I want to give a shout-out to Alex Simmons' team. Five straight wins going into the game against North Texas and then onto the conference tournament. They have played as well as anybody over the course of the last 2.5-3 weeks. This is strange. You have Tulsa, North Texas, and Temple all at 12-5 with a game to go. So they've all secured double byes. After them, battling for the fourth spot, and I'm not going to care to look at the tiebreak right now, Charlotte, USF, UTSA, the Tigers, UAB, Rice, all 9-8. And then there's two teams at 8-9, but I think they're out. One game to go. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 teams at 9-8 battling to get that fourth spot. And the other three teams are battling to see who finishes 1, 2, 3 in the seeds. But Alex Simmons and her team, five straight wins going into the game against North Texas tomorrow night. PGA Tour, they had to wrap it up on Monday. They have had some bad weather during events. Not all of them, but some of the events have been washed out on Sunday. They've had to finish on Monday. And Austin Ekroat will be the victor. He'll win his first PGA Tour. I know Rory was in this field, and I know there were a few other really good names. But, man, I'm telling you, I've watched two straight weekends, and I'm not saying that LIV is better than the PGA Tour, but I'm watching LIV and I'm watching all the names that you know you get every event, and then I'm watching the PGA Tour and the leaderboards that we have had. There are dudes on there that you've never heard of. Now, there's more great players on the PGA Tour. There's no question about it. But these leaderboards and these winners, first-time winners, it's becoming almost a weekly thing. And then it was the head of the DP Tour saying yesterday that he thinks that the deal between the DP Tour, PIP, and the PGA Tour, it's not a guarantee. This thing, PIF, I should say, that it's not a guarantee that it's going to happen. After everything we heard last spring, early summer, the deadline that has come and gone, that it may not be a done deal between these three leagues coming together.
I think that's rather obvious that it's not. If it was a done deal, like if it was going to really happen for sure, it would have been done by now.
Didn't Joe say, Joe Tomac tell us
they're well over 3 months now over the deadline. I would think there's clearly some issues.
Didn't Joe Tomac say that he thought it was going to happen? I'm trying to remember what Joe said.
I think he said he didn't know whether it was going to happen.
Well, here's the thing, too.
Just said that they, with this new the investment by that other group, that there was the door was still open for them, but there was no. I don't remember exactly what, but that was it. Just it still might happen, but nothing certainly certain.
Well, here's the thing. What's holding this back? Like, what's keeping it from being a deal that all the parties agree upon? We don't get that information. We don't know what the sticking points are. And I'd like to know more information about where they stand. I'm sorry. I miss Cameron Smith. I miss John Rahm. I miss Brooks Koepka playing on the PGA Tour. I know they're going to play in the majors, but I miss having those guys on a weekly basis. Instead, we got wins by Austin Ekroat. Your Oklahoma Sooner softball team went down, baby. They finally lost to Louisiana.
Yeah. A team that's below 500. But the streak is done.
The streak is over.
That's 71. That's just it's an astonishing streak, first of all. But, I mean, you talk about it. dominant team. That is, it's crazy that Louisiana, who's below 500 on the year, is the team that ends the streak for Oklahoma softball.
They've won three straight national titles, correct?
Yes, yes.
And it's not like they can't win their fourth, right? This is just a regular season game, but the streak ends at 71. What a run by the Oklahoma Sooners softball team.
They went more than a year without losing a game. Had to be a bit of a shock to the system. They're like, wait a second, what? We did what? What happened? We don't know how this works.
What does this L mean? I don't understand what this L means.
But last year they lost the game in February, and then that's when they started the run. So who knows? They might start the run now and may not lose another game this year. You never know. Like they could easily now go undefeated the rest of the season. That's how good they are.
Want to reiterate, we opened the show congratulating FACS and Briarcrest. Want to do that now just in case you weren't able to listen that early. For all you folks that follow high school basketball and those that are affiliated with FACS and Briarcrest, congratulations for your Division II boys state championships over the weekend.
Fleet Feet folks, if you are into running or maybe just thinking about getting into running and want to get the gear, well, you need to head over to Fleet Feet. They'll take care of you, especially with shoes that are just right for you. That's very important to avoid injuries or any other problems, and that's exactly what they'll do. They take a look at the way you run or the way you walk, and they'll get you fitted with shoes that are right for you. Heck, some people don't even buy the right size shoe. They will make sure you have the right size, the right shoe, all of that is perfect for you. Plus, any other gear that you need, from shirts and shorts and hats, sunglasses, whatever, anything else, socks, they got it all for you at Fleet Feet. They're all runners. They're there to help you as well. If you maybe need a little bit of advice, you need some help, you can get involved in their group runs and other things that they do as well. Talk to the folks at Fleet Feet. They've got the location in the Laurelwood Shopping Center in East Memphis. They also have the location out in Collierville, Poplar, and Houston Levee, next to the Hueys out there. Go see them at either one of the two locations of Fleet Feet. You can also find them online, fleetfeetmemphis.com, on social media as well, where they keep up to date with the things they have going on. Go see them at Fleet Feet.
And one other quick note, according to a report, Oklahoma is hiring former Memphis offensive coordinator Kevin Johns. He'll become an offensive analyst on Brent Venables' staff. So Johns, who was most recently with Duke, was let go. Was key in the development of Riley Leonard, will now join the Oklahoma Sooners. The Grizzlies tonight taking on the Brooklyn Nets in Brooklyn. We'll talk about it on the show tomorrow. We're back starting bright and early at 7 a.m. Among our guests tomorrow, Jeff Crane from the University of Memphis. We'll have Humdinger's trivia as well. Again, that's tomorrow starting at 7 a.m. right here on Sports 56 Mornings. Roll on, friends, on Sports 56 is coming up next. I want to thank you for all your calls and texts. We appreciate it. For Eli Savoy and for Zach Boyd, I'm Greg Gaston. Have a great Monday, everybody.